one of the best times of the year. And no, I'm not just saying that because it was my birthday this week. March Madness is here. The brackets are set. And for the second year in a row under a first-year head coach, the WVU women's basketball team is going dancing. This year, the madness for the Mountaineer women gets underway in the modern-day mecca of women's college basketball, Iowa City, Iowa. You are listening to the Gold and Blue Nation podcast, an NCAA Women's Basketball Tournament Preview Edition presented by Elite Roofing and Construction. Roof with the best or leak with the rest. Brian Decker and Kevin Redfern here with you in our Morgantown studios. Kevin, what if I told you the hottest ticket in the country this weekend was not for a sporting event in New York, Chicago, or LA, but in the Hawkeye State, and WVU will be there?
Well, any chance that you are kind of cast in the same breath as the face of a sport, you're under a spotlight, and that's what's happening this weekend. It's on the other side of the regional, the bracket, but the Iowa Hawkeyes, Caitlin Clark, the all-time leading scorer in college hoops, both men or women's. So, I mean, it would be a game ahead, but you can't help but notice that you're under the same building as a lot of cameras and people who paid a lot of money to get into the building to watch that basketball. So, I mean, people are upset about maybe where WVU was seated, and I'm sure we'll get into that. But if there's a silver lining, I think this is the one.
Yeah, we will definitely get into the feeling around West Virginia's seed line, also the opportunity that you kind of alluded to there that West Virginia has in front of it of playing with, against possibly Caitlin Clark and all the coverage that surrounds Caitlin Clark right now. But we mentioned the tickets at the top here. Tickets almost immediately sold out once it was confirmed that Iowa was a number one seed and would be playing the first two rounds of the NCAA tournament there in their home venue. You can still get tickets for this game. SeatGeek is the way to go for that. We just checked right before we recorded this podcast here on Wednesday afternoon, $174, the lowest get in the door price for day one. To get a ticket for both days of the tournament, Saturday and Sunday, that's three sessions total, including the championship game, the last home game, likely for Caitlin Clark there on Monday, over $800 just to get in the door and have a seat possibly there at Carver Hawkeye Arena. I mean, really, again, the hottest ticket in the country, really, and it's going to be a spectacle no matter what happens there in Iowa City this weekend because of just the magnitude of Caitlin Clark and what her impact on the sport, and also a chance, as we've kind of alluded to and we'll get further into, the opportunity for one of these teams also in this regional to upset one of the betting favorites to win the NCAA championship this year.
And when you look at Iowa, I mean, not just in terms of ticket sales, who is showing up to the game, but if you look at the eyeballs, for their game against Ohio State when Caitlin Clark broke the scoring record, the viewership peaked at over 4 million viewers.
Wow.
And then later in the Big Ten championship game when they beat Nebraska in overtime, the average viewership was 3 million viewers, and they peaked at 4.5 million.
Wow.
So you're talking about a game that could be one of the best players of all time playing her last game in her home arena, probably reaches the magnitude of those games. Odds are, if you're playing Iowa at Iowa in their last home game with Caitlin Clark, it's going to be the most watched program on television in the United States at that moment.
Definitely so. Definitely so. But before West Virginia can even start thinking about Caitlin Clark in Iowa, they do have to take on Princeton. It'll be 8th-seeded West Virginia, 24-7 on the year, playing 9th-seeded Princeton, the Tigers out of the Ivy League, 25-4 on the year in the first round. That's Saturday, 5:30 p.m. Eastern. That game will be televised nationally on ESPN2. This is an interesting scout that WVU has in front of it. We'll kind of get to that here in a second. But looking at the bracket as a whole, as we kind of get into this NCAA tournament preview here, seven teams from the Big 12 made the NCAA tournament this year. WVU an 8th seed. 4th-seeded Kansas State is in West Virginia's regional. That's another potential matchup down the line for whoever comes out of Iowa City. Texas earned the number 1 seed in the Portland 4 regional. We mentioned that in West Virginia's portion of the bracket, you know, Caitlin Clark and Iowa are there, but really that entire Albany 2 regional, to me, Kevin, just loaded with talent. UCLA might be the best number 2 seed in the tournament. LSU is the number 3 seed. They're the defending national champs. We know how good K-State is. You look a little bit further down, Louisville, the 6th seed, is in this region, a very good program. Princeton, who West Virginia will face in the first round, no slouch either. Number 10 UNLV, the number 10 seed in this region, only 2 losses on the year. For all the highballs that are going to be on Iowa, it will be for good reason, because just about every step of the way, maybe outside of that first round, it's going to be a very good opponent that I will be facing, and hopefully West Virginia's in that conversation coming up on Monday.
Yeah, you talk about UNLV only has two losses. Princeton only has, what, four losses? Mm-hmm. And then Kansas State, LSU with Ioka Lee, Angel Reese, those teams match up really well against West Virginia. So looking down against the line, I mean, like you said, this regional is stacked, and it's going to take the Mountaineers playing their best basketball if they want to make some noise in there.
We have mentioned West Virginia gets the 8 seed. Now, many thought WVU was seeded a little bit too low, and I think there are metrics that kind of support that thought process. Only one 7 seed in this year's NCAA tournament had more wins than WVU on the season. That is Creighton. Only one 7 seed has a better net ranking than WVU. That's Duke by just one spot, 20-21 coming into Wednesday. However, I think two things ultimately hurt WVU in the seeding line, in the views of the NCAA Tournament Selection Committee. A weak non-conference schedule, and Penn State did not help that. It was a Penn State team that was nationally ranked at the time, fell off as the season went on. And then that 2-4 stretch entering the NCAA tournament where West Virginia did not finish the regular season very well, and then go 1-1 in the Big 12 tournament. That didn't help West Virginia. But still, as we know very well, and I think people around basketball know very well, when you've got J.J. Quinterly and Jordan Harrison, you've got Mark Kellogg's press, it's a dangerous 8 seed to be playing down the line.
Yeah, 100%. And to me, the biggest knocker for them in terms of seeding was that loss to Oklahoma State. You take that away, and I can almost guarantee you they're a 7 seed or higher. When it comes to the non-conference schedule, I think you're right. The trademark opponent there was Penn State, a ranked moment at the time, and they may have gone through that whole schedule undefeated, but it's something to kind of put in the back of your head for future scheduling now, because it doesn't hurt you as much when you're kind of shoo-in for the tournament, but in a year where maybe you're on the bubble, that makes a lot more of a difference. And like we've already mentioned, there are some silver linings to this one, so you kind of don't really feel the effect that much, but like I said, something to keep in the back of your mind.
I think the other thing that hurt WVU a little bit during the regular season was they were constantly, the Mountaineers were in ball games with ranked teams, but only once or twice were they able to get over that hump and defeat a ranked team. They did it at home against Oklahoma, couldn't do it at home against Baylor, were unable to do it on the road and then on a neutral site against against Kansas State. They split against Iowa State, which was in and out of the rankings. Yeah. They had tons of opportunities, lost handedly at home against Texas, but the Mountaineers, more often than not, just weren't able to get over that hump, get that kind of game-winning shot, as we saw a couple times against Kansas State, to pad that resume out and maybe jump you up a seed line or two entering the NCAAs.
Yeah, and those games, high-pressure, tournament-esque style games, and off the top of my head, I'm not sure if they even won 500 in those games, those overtime games and those games against ranked opponents.
Don't think so, no.
But it's, yeah, I mean, those are monumental ones, just as heavy as the non-con schedule. The Iowa State loss you bring up, I mean, they surrendered a double-digit lead, I think. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, tough ones, but you can kind of only look back on them now and full speed ahead on the tournament.
Princeton, who West Virginia is facing in the first round of the NCAA tournament on Saturday, also battle-tested. This is a Princeton team that did face, you know, coming out of the Ivy League, four NCAA tournament teams this year. They split those games 2-2, losing to UCLA and Indiana, defeating Middle Tennessee State and Oklahoma. There's a direct comparison there in film study, which Mark Kellogg said, I think you can only take so much from that game when he met with the media earlier this week, but there's certainly a direct comparison to be made of how you match up against Oklahoma, how Princeton matches up against Oklahoma. So there is some direct tape there. Not a lot of direct history between West Virginia and Princeton on the court. The only previous meeting was back in 2016 in the NCAA tournament. West Virginia did win that game before ultimately losing to Ohio State in the next round in Columbus that season. Good guard matchup here that we're going to have on tap for this first round between West Virginia's J.J. Quinterly and Jordan Harrison and Princeton's Caitlin Chen and Madison St. Rose. Those two for Princeton average basically a combined 30 points per game. West Virginia's guard tandem averaging about 31 points per game. So good guard play there. And Mark Kellogg said yesterday, we'll bring you some of his comments in a minute, but Mark Kellogg said on Tuesday that, you know, Princeton kind of has the size and some of the dynamic abilities of a Big 12 team, but there's not really one Big 12 team you can really compare Princeton to. It's just a different style in how they get things done. I think we've mentioned that Princeton, the Tigers, the Ivy League champions this year, they've lost just once since early December. You talk about a team coming in on a roll into this NCAA tournament, have lost just once since early December, only had one league loss this year. Fifth time in the last six seasons making the NCAA tournament, the Tigers have knocked off Power 5 programs in the dance each of the last 2 years. So certainly this is a program, this is a team, when you've got veteran players like Caitlin Chen and Madison St. Rose and Ellie Mitchell as well down low, who know how to knock off a Power 5 program in the big dance. That bodes well for Princeton. But if you're West Virginia, this is a really interesting matchup, I think, to scout based on how Princeton kind of matches up, at least looking at them just statistically.
Yeah, and that one league loss to Columbia, I mean, they came back and then beat them by 20 in the conference championship. So they got their revenge there. I'm sure that one doesn't sit well with them at all. But yeah, veterans here, group of veterans. I think this matchup between West Virginia and Princeton is probably going to be one of the higher build round of 64 matchups in the whole tournament. Two really strong defensive teams. Princeton, number 17 in the nation in points allowed per game with 56. It's only about a point less than West Virginia, who's down in the 40s. But that leads, or that led the Ivy League. They led the Ivy League in three-point percentage. So I think that what's going to come down to is who gets hot. I mean, these two teams, they're not going to give each other a ton of looks. So is JJ Quinterly going to rise above that and put up 25 on her own? Or is she going to demand that much attention where someone else is going to have to get hot, or someone's going to have to knock down some clutch shots from beyond the three-point line? To me, this is going to be a grinder. Low scoring, two good defenses, two good coaches, two teams that don't make a lot of mistakes, but whoever makes the fewest is probably going to come on top.
You talk about making mistakes or not making mistakes. Princeton is also among the nation's best teams in turnover margin, plus 4.76 on the season. But certainly the Tigers have not faced a relenting pressure press defense like the one Mark Kellogg will throw at it on Saturday. So that will be something to watch. How often can West Virginia turn over the Tigers? The other thing to watch is, I've been harping on this week. I know Mark Kellogg, you'll hear this comment later. He kind of, you know, opposed maybe me on this, it bringing up the alternate viewpoint is, though, that Princeton coming in is 349th out of 349 in the country in defensive three-point percentage. Opposing teams are shooting 38% from beyond the arc against Princeton. Now, to Mark Kellogg's credit, the point he made was that teams are not shooting a lot of three-pointers against Princeton. We know West Virginia at times can get very three-point happy. So that, to me, will be interesting to see. Does West Virginia come out, make this almost a three-point shooting contest, or does West Virginia stay true and say, you know what, they actually maybe guard the three-point line better than the stats show. Let's try to attack inside or in the mid-range. And the mid-range is definitely Princeton's strength for sure.
Yeah, and those games where West Virginia does kind of get trigger happy from deep haven't been their best games of the season. So I find it hard to believe that they'll kind of settle for those shots and take more of them, kind of go against the grain. One last thing that you kind of alluded to, I don't know if Princeton's played a defense like this, the full court pressure and everything. WVU forces 24 turnovers a game. Princeton hasn't turned the ball over 24 times once this season. So is that because they handle it well? Is that because they haven't faced a defense like this? I think that's going to be something to watch for sure.
That'll certainly be one of the things that Mark Kellogg's coaching staff has been digging into this week, into how to attack Princeton's offense with West Virginia's defense. And you know, the other thing is, on the flip side of that, you turn that argument around now, how does, once Princeton get into the half-court set, Princeton very mid-range heavy, can West Virginia's defense be disciplined enough to stop that and then also not allow Elliott Mitchell and some of the post players to then wreak havoc down low? That's the other thing that I think West Virginia has to worry about. If they can apply pressure the first half of the court, how does Princeton then answer, and West Virginia answer as well on the back half?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be something to watch. And rebounding, too. That's been an issue all year. So if they're heavy on the mid-range, there's going to be some longer rebounds.
Yeah, you're exactly right. We've kind of teased this, so let's get to some sound now from the head coach of the Mountaineers, Mark Kellogg, who spoke with the media on Tuesday ahead of his team's trip to Iowa City.
What did you find out about Princeton?
Quality program, team. They're having a fantastic year. It's 5 years in a row for them in the tournament. You know, they beat North Carolina State a year ago in the tournament, beat Kentucky the year before that in the tournament. So, I mean, they're good. They're really, really good, well-coached. They're tough. They're physical. They rebound it really well. The three guards lead them in scoring. You know, don't shoot a ton of threes, but, you know, can get going from three, and then they kind of kill teams at the mid-range. range. They're elite as any team, as good as any team at the mid-range that we have seen. And then defensively, I think they're giving up like 52 a game in their last five, you know, 55 overall, but the last five is even lower than that. So this team can guard really, really well, and, you know, and there's some versatility to what they do. So, no, as I like to say, full attention for sure. This is a quality opponent. You know, I think they're exceptional elite in the half court when they can run their offense, and it's good, and they are. I mean, the timing is great. They know what they're looking for. They know their roles. Their Caitlin Chen, their point guard, is really dynamic and leads the show for them. And the St. Rose kid's pretty special, too, on the wing. And then another freshman wing that's good, and these two posts, they're physical.
Do they remind you of anyone in the Big 12 from that standpoint of really dynamic guard but really good rebounder as well on the inside?
Well, a lot of the Big 12 rebounds, so that, you know, that's been an Achilles heels of ours all year. So, you know, a specific team, no, probably not. A little bit different, but definitely, I mean, they've got dynamic guards that can really score it. You know, don't really shoot it necessarily at the post position from the perimeter, but they understand what, you know, their role is, and they do a great job of it. So, no, a little bit different, and then just, you know, they don't quite have the size of some of the Big 12, just as in height, but they play just as hard, and they're just as physical as some of the Big 12 teams.
I know it's the NCAA tournament, but how do you keep your team from in the back of their minds looking ahead to that next game if they get to that?
I don't think that's overly difficult, if I'm being completely honest. I mean, there is no Iowa if you don't take care of Princeton. And
there's like a lot of star power right now in women's college basketball, Caitlin Clark, et cetera, et cetera. With so many eyes being on the tournament this year, what can that do for a player like JJ, who obviously awards, she's up for the same as all those players are? Can that get her on that kind of national spotlight as well?
Sure can, yeah. It can for JJ, any player on the team, our program, you know, that we're trying to build here. So, yeah, now you get the national spotlight. You're on national TV. There's people that don't watch basketball that all of a sudden start watching basketball in March Madness and are filling out brackets and don't even know what they're talking about, but they get into it, you know. And us being in Iowa City, will obviously that will take it to another level as well, because she's the face of women's basketball. So, yeah, JJ's got opportunity. All of our kids do. You know, for our program, all of it's all on the table right now. But that's what makes this such a great time of year, and our sport is growing, and you know, it's not just Caitlin. There's lots of other players and coaches that are helping build this, but we are certainly going to a site that is passionate right now about women's basketball.
Elite Roofing and Construction is West Virginia's and the region's top reliable roofing professionals. Elite Roofing LLC specializes in residential and commercial roofing services and is dedicated to providing customer service that is second to none. Whether you have a new construction project or need to replace an old or damaged roof, Elite Roofing offers roofing repair and replacement services with free estimates. We also work with a variety of roofing types, including metal, shingle, tile, and rubber roofing. All of our work is completed by trained and certified roofing specialists. We never use subcontractors to complete any of our work. We work with insurance and financing is available. Elite Roofing and Construction. Roof with the best or leak with the rest.
Despite the ill-fated efforts of President Biden and his wealthy New York friends, West Virginia coal is thriving and being shipped to 45 countries worldwide. Given its high quality and clean burning properties, countries across the globe are demanding and consuming it, and in-state production continues to grow. With billions of dollars of recent investment in West Virginia mining operations, combined with the reliability of our coal-fired electric manufacturing facilities, West Virginia coal is here to stay. No other fuel in the world matches West Virginia coal for base load generation and steel making. Like a good friend, it's always been and always will be there, keeping the lights on and contributing greatly to our growing economy. In fact, coal continues to sustain 50,000 plus West Virginia jobs, putting food on the table for Mountain State families. Visit friendsofcoal.org to learn more. A message from the Friends of Coal.
Ryan Decker and Kevin Redfern here with you on this NCAA Women's Basketball Tournament Preview edition of the Gold and Blue Nation podcast. Kevin, we just heard from WVU Women's Basketball Head Coach Mark Kellogg. I want to touch on something I asked him about earlier this week, and that is, this is a very unique opportunity that West Virginia has in front of it as a program, both as a from a team perspective and also individually as a player, especially for someone like JJ Quinterly. I know some were upset about the draw and the seed line for WVU, but if you're part of this program, I just think you have to be thrilled about the opportunity that you have in front of you over the next couple of days, play in front of a lot of eyeballs, as we alluded to off the top, play on national television, but also you have the opportunity to do something only a few teams have done this year.
It was like halfway through the Big 12 season that we talked to Mark Kellogg about what's going to take J.J. Quinterly from an all-Big 12 player to an All-American player. And he talked a lot about, you know, decision-making, fewer turnovers, that type of stuff. But when you're talking more like legacy type of stuff and rising to the moment and being an All-American type player in March, I mean, this is the situation that you have to take advantage of. Eight seed is tough. It's a tough draw. You're playing a really good team, a team that's pretty equal to you right off the bat. If you take advantage of that, then you have the luxury of playing the best player in the country in front of a lot of people. If you're someone who's going for that All-American, that national type legacy, that identity, these are the type of games you have to win and you have to perform well in. J.J. Quinterly probably has the best opportunity out of anyone on West Virginia to do that, and it's going to have to come from our defense. I mean, think about it. If you do end up playing Iowa, you've got a Naismith Defensive Player of the Year semifinalist playing against last year's National Player of the Year, probably could win it again this year. I mean, that's the old adage, the unstoppable force meets immovable object. That's exactly what we're looking for. So, I mean, the path is laid. Now it's just about executing it for J.J. Quinterly.
I heard this point made on a national radio show earlier this week that, you know, when you play in the NCAA tournament, each round kind of gives your program, your school, a point, so to speak, mm-hmm. in terms of monetary value.
Yep.
So that first round against Princeton, that's a point for WVU. It is what it is. It's a point for WVU. That second round, if you get there, and that's not a given based on how well of a team Princeton is. But if you get to that second round and you play Iowa, given that Iowa doesn't get upset and the biggest upset in the history of women's college basketball against the 16th seed, that's a point and a half at least because of the tournament draw that it's going to be from just there in-house at Iowa. It will be Caitlin Clark's last game. It'll be a national TV draw, probably a prime time. I would have to imagine that gets a prime time slot on ESPN. And then just you talk about from a player standpoint with J.J. Quinterly, that's a huge legacy game of if you can just go toe-to-toe with who is inarguably the best player in the country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, and you have to want it too. If you're JJ, I mean, you might never, even in next year, 2 years in your professional career, you might never have a game like that again, based off how much of a boom women's basketball is going through at the collegiate level. So I mean, it's just a great opportunity, and I think a lot of people are hoping for it in terms of star power, in terms of getting the best players in the game. JJ Quinterly right now, she's one of the best defensive players in the country. That's been decided. She's one of the best players in the nation's best conference, or one of them. That's already been decided. So it's probably about time for her and some other players to get on that same level of superstardom.
And so you talk about J.J. Quinterly in that light. Obviously, you know, I think people who follow women's college basketball closely probably know the name J.J. Quinterly at this point because of her defensive prowess. But the casual fan has now an opportunity to learn her name this weekend. The other thing is, too, I mean, think of the opportunity in front of a player like Jordan Harrison, who was under-recruited coming out of high school, felt probably that she could have been a Division I player straight out, goes to play for Mark Kellogg at Stephen F. Austin last year. I should have said a high Division I player coming out of high school. Goes to play for Stephen F. Austin, comes to WVU a step up, and then your first NCAA tournament appearance with the Mountaineers can include all the hoopla that surrounds Iowa women's basketball right now. I mean, it's an incredible opportunity for West Virginia. And then I made this argument in the office yesterday. To me, if I'm a player, I'm just getting juiced up about this because of the opportunity in front of me. But B, think like 50 years down the road. If you're one of these players, you can say, hey, and even the coach as well, I was on the court versus Iowa in Caitlin Clark's last home game as an Iowa Hawkeye.
Yep.
That's just so cool to be able to say that, tell your grandkids 50 years down the line that you were in that opportunity.
Yeah, who knows how long that record's going to stand. I mean, I find it hard to believe that someone on the men's side is going to beat it with one and dones right. and going pro and everything like that. So, yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I think that this is a moment in time that could be bookmarked for a lot of people.
Obviously, we've talked a lot about the potential matchup between WVU and Iowa in the second round, but of course, West Virginia has to get past Princeton in that first round. That is a 5:30 p.m. Eastern tip on ESPN2 on Saturday, March 23rd. Tickets, of course, hard to come by at this point, but some still available in SeatGeek and on the secondary market. Kevin, any final thoughts here just on that first round matchup, WVU-Princeton? As we mentioned, it's a hard scout, I think, for West Virginia going in, but certainly you've got a week to prepare. And the good news is, which we, I guess, didn't address either, Mark Kellogg saying earlier this week, J.J. Quinterly good to go, may or may not wear a brace just to protect and give a little bit of extra stability on that lower leg injury. And then Danelle Arakbabu on the inside, also good to go as well. So those are two good things for West Virginia going in from a health standpoint.
That's huge in terms of if they are, like you mentioned, going to kind of feed into Princeton's defensive tendencies and work inside the arc. Danelle Arakbabu has been a pleasant surprise, and she's really earned that role kind of coming off the bench there. That's something that they didn't have in the conference tournament, so that'll be big. But yeah, no, full roster against a good Princeton team. No one's going to be looking past them. And like I said, I think this is going to be one of the most intriguing matchups in all of the round of 64. So looking forward to it.
This will be Mark Kellogg's 10th NCAA tournament appearance as a head coach overall, third at the Division I level. He's been there a couple times with Stephen F. Austin and now once in his inaugural season with WVU. John Lowe looked up this stat earlier in the week. West Virginia now joins Baylor as the only program in the Big 12 to make the NCAA tournament back-to-back years under new head coaches. It's a great stat. It's a great thing. It's a great nod to the foundation and stability that's within some of the players here, especially, but also having good leadership from a coaching standpoint as well.
Yeah, what a luxury for those fans, huh?
Yeah, definitely so. Well, as we mentioned, WVU and Princeton squaring off 5:30 p.m. Eastern on Saturday. ESPN2, winner of that game, in all likelihood, gets number one Iowa on Monday. Golden Blue Nation will have you covered on the NCAA tournament action. GoldenBlueNation.com is the place to find it, or on the GBN app, which, just like West Virginians, are always free. Stay locked in with more Golden Blue Nation podcast episodes coming up in the near future. Kevin and I will be recapping each WVU baseball weekend Big 12 series from this point on, starting with this weekend's action in Norman against number 17 Oklahoma. And as always, for the latest on all things WVU sports, head to GoldenBlueNation.com. This has been the Golden Blue Nation podcast presented by Elite Roofing and Construction. Roof with the best or leak with the rest. For Kevin Redfern, I'm Ryan Decker. The madness is underway. We'll see you later.